I work in a type of anti-aesthetic mode. I feel aesthetics around the black face, the black body, so embedded in ownership, in capital, in service, that it's distracting for people. I'm of a physical type, and I'm brown and round. My hair is in its natural state, and it can be distracting because people will take me in inadvertently or advertently through their filters, through what they perceive someone like myself should be writing or should be doing, especially in this era of the selfie and the constant picturing of the self. I find that I lose agency, unfortunately, in that. It's unfortunate. But when people must hear me speak, when I move that filter, when I don't allow them that filter, they begin to listen. And then when they see me, they respond to me quite differently. When I appear before the audience, in about two or three poems in, it's very clear that their perception of me changes. Their ideas of who I am, what a woman who has this visage would speak on or talk about or sound like or be, shifts. So people who paid no attention to me, who walked right by me because to have this aesthetic as a woman in the West is to be invisible, is to be the maid in the corner. And when they're confronted with my visage against the kind of transgressive text I write, it shifts their eye and they begin to see me, really see me. Suddenly, their filters have to drop because their filters have been exploded. And the phenomenon doesn't last that long. For some people, it might last 2 days. For some people, it might last 20 minutes past the reading. And then eventually, they fall back into their old patterns of perception and ideas around what this personal aesthetic means. But for a moment, I see them seeing me. And that's a powerful exchange. And in that moment, they begin to listen, to really hear what I'm trying to do with my text. Part of the reason I chose poetics, or it chose me, is because it's freeing. Because the first poetry that reached me reached across time, across era, across race, across culture, across gender. The first poem that moved me was by Robert Browning. And in my mind, if something, an art could do that, reach beyond the confines and the boundaries and the conventions of society, then yes, for me, that's exactly what I want for my own work. And when I'm in the midst of writing, I am utterly free of thinking about who I'm writing for. Although I do believe I'm writing for someone, I don't predetermine it. They let me know who I'm writing for. Though I am writing occasionally to someone, I might have a you that's a general you in my work, but because the wellspring of my work is often coming from the abyss of aloneness or sorrow or wounding, as I noted yesterday, I keen. Some of us are born to be keeners. I'm a keener, and life has led me to be a keener. So there is some, as we would say in African-American vernacular, some calling out that I do. You who do this, you who do that, I see you. And I'm saying you do this, and you do that, and this is the impact on me, and you will see this impact on me. And in doing this, it becomes almost allegorical. And I have some younger women who enjoy my work who say, I feel you're speaking for me. I don't do that with the intent as I'm writing, but I know that that can be the result. And if they find something that helps or heals or challenges, whatever it is they need, I'm glad it does that. But there are sometimes people I'm writing to. And I may not use the names, but as it turns out, again, it becomes allegorical. The you that wounds me is often the you that wounds others. I would call the entirety of my text subversive. I have a tendency, if something wants to block me or my vision, I go around, I go over, I dig under, I crash through. There are attempts to pigeonhole me. I actively fight it. For example, on the back of one of my books, the original statement was going to be Vivie Francis, a black woman speaking back to the romantic pastoralist. But does a white male have on the back of his book, white male so-and-so is speaking to white male, so, right? The engagement that I have in my last book, Forest Primeval, with ideas around the pastoral, right, are engagements that each of us actually have, whether we're aware of it or not, because ideas around the pastoral inform the way we look at rurality, at rural culture, at gardening, all kinds of things, right? So did it matter that I was a black woman speaking to that? That I am a black woman informs everything that I write. But that was not the determining factor for why I was writing the poetry or speaking into that. That was not the determining factor. So in the text, as you read the book, are you aware that the writer is black? Sometimes. And I would say at other points, no. When I think that pushes or pinches or whatever, and somehow touches my blackness, I don't mind stating that. However, only then. So the question becomes, how do you feel pigeonholed in marketing? So when my editors wanted to know, well, how do we market you? You market me as poet. You market me in the section where there's poetry. And when people come upon my poems, upon my book, they get the surprise and the wonder and the discovery of the black female eye and perspective. But I believe it should be organic. So just my feeling that it should be organic is subversive. I want it to be radically normative, as with any other poet. Just my feeling that way subverts ideas that would pigeonhole me. And the text itself, I simply do not write what people expect a woman who they see in the room like me to write. I write outside of African diasporic expectations, which are aesthetically are extremely informed by Western expectations. So I'm trying to implode those. I automatically write outside of them, but I'm trying to implode those. And I'm hoping that the writers who read me will say to themselves, I too can write outside of conventional expectations.